Podcasts tuned to yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's past. I'm Mark LeVonier. Coming up in this hour, adventure. Later on, from the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater, adapting a movie from the 1940s. But first, it's The Adventures of Frank Race and The Adventure of the Roughnecks Will, from September 25th, 1949, a syndicated recording.
The Adventures of Frank Race, starring Tom Collins. The war changed many things, the face of the earth and the people on it. Before the war, Frank Race worked as an attorney, but he traded his law books for the cloak and dagger of the OSS. And when it was over, his former life was over too. Adventure had become his business. The Adventures of Frank Race. And now we join Frank Race for the adventure of the Roughnecks Will.
Sometime people come back to you through the years. People you used to know or work with. They come in unexpected phone calls or chance meetings on the street of some strange town. And some of them you want to see and some you hope you'll never see again. Jim Fallon was one of the former. We'd gone through law school together, played football together. And one night in 1943, we'd almost died together in a parachute jump behind Rommel's lines. So when Mark Donovan relayed Jim's call to me, I told him to ignore the red lights. I was full of the excitement that always comes from the thought of seeing an old friend or an old flame.
There's a layout. Office suite 401 to 416. And look at the names on that door, will you? Fallon, Foster, Peabody, Morton, and LaRoche. Attorneys at law.
Yes, Jim Fallon's come a long way, Mark.
A guy has to come a long way when he spends every day walking to 16 offices.
Yep, let's go in.
No, not in there. He said you should come through the door, Mark, 411. Ignoring that it is marked private.
Sounds top secret. Right here. Here's 411. Hello, Jim.
Race. Oh, man, it's good to see you.
You know Mark Donovan.
We spoke on the phone. How are you?
Hi.
I understand you're having a little trouble, Jim.
Race, this isn't little. I can brush any doubts out of your mind by mentioning the name of my problem. Martin Bayard Cullen.
That could be serious.
Wait a minute, that name sounds familiar. Who is he, Rich?
Martin Bayard Cullen's an old man who avoids publicity. He can't avoid it altogether, though. It's hard to avoid it if you happen to be one of the 10 richest men in the world.
Holy cow.
We handle his legal business, Race. Since this morning, though, I've been wishing we didn't.
He's kicking up his heels, huh?
No. But somebody broke into this office last night. They opened Cullen's will. I want you to read the will, Race. He wrote it himself. And it's an invitation to murder.
Is this it?
Yes.
Brief, isn't it? One paragraph.
One paragraph, written with TNT. Go ahead, read it.
It is my wish that my entire fortune pass into the hands of only one person. However, I list here the four persons who have been closest to me, with the provision that the entire estate go to the last one surviving.
The last one surviving? Wow, brother.
You know the four people named here, Jim?
Yes, two of them are granddaughters of his wife by a former marriage. Cullen never had any children.
Then they must be Joan and Leona Richards.
Yes. And there's Carrie Bragg. She's been Cullen's nurse for the past 10 years. And the man, Bill Forsyth, is Cullen's secretary.
And all any one of them has to do to become fabulously wealthy is murder the other three.
That kind of money has turned some pretty nice people into murderers, Race.
Yes, it has. Tell me, does Cullen know his will's been opened?
Yes. I informed him immediately. I asked him to change the will at once and let it be known that it has been changed.
But he won't do it, huh?
Nope. And he told me not to call an investigator. But I can't hold still for that.
I'd like to have a talk with Cullen. Will you clear a meeting?
I'll try. I'll do it while you're driving up to his place. The estate is called Gray Acres. It's in Larchmont.
Gray Acres was appropriately named. The house had the grim aspects of a medieval castle, and even the grass and trees seemed colorless and drab, despite the evidence of care. Martin Bayard Cullen matched the general atmosphere. Only his large, dark eyes glittered through a shriveled and pasty skin as he lay propped up by pillows. But when he spoke, his voice belied his 90 years.
My orders to Fallon were quite precise. I want no investigation. I let you in so I could tell you that. Now get out.
I'm not here on your behalf, Mr. Cullen. I just wanted to see what kind of a man it is who uses his fortune to try to influence murder.
Since I'll be the first to be murdered if it does happen, it's still my affair.
It's time for your medicine, Mr. Cullen.
This is one of my heirs, Race. Or shall we say that Miss Bragg is a candidate? She doesn't seem to be out murdering anybody, but she is giving me medicine to drink. Someday it may not be exactly what the doctor ordered. Isn't that right, Miss Bragg?
That's right, Mr. Cullen.
She agrees with me, Race. See? Everybody agrees with an old man. Especially when he has millions they may get their claws on.
Come on, Mark. Let's get out of here.
Yeah. The medicine ain't the only thing that smells in this joint. Well, now there's a sweet old guy. Will you tell me how that prune with the lemon personality get to be rich, huh?
Well, he started out as a roughneck on a drilling crew. Oil wildcat is. Now he's loaded. Oil and steel, bonds, stocks, cattle. You name it, he's got it.
You seem pretty well informed about the old man, Race.
Oh, hello, Forsythe.
How'd the interview go?
Not too well. You warned me. Now, look, Forsythe, you're his secretary. Anybody been especially snoopy lately?
Only me, frankly. I have my finger on all of the old man's affairs.
You know about the will?
I've always known about the will. You see, Race, I typed it.
You know, Race, that old guy must be tired of living. And at his age, I can understand him.
At his age, a man can be tired of a lot of things, Marcus. But he can also be very determined.
Hmm? Like about what?
About not wanting things investigated. There's been a blue convertible perched on our tail since we left the estate.
Well, I will lose it, but quick.
Now, let's play it the other way. Slow down, come to a stop at that billboard sign.
Right.
All right, get out. Pretend to be checking the tires.
I get you. Here comes the car. It's slowing down.
We gotta stop, though.
Duck, Race, duck!
Come on, Mark, behind the sign.
Backing up.
Keep low.
Now you must have winged him. Car got out of control.
He's hurt. Not badly. Let's follow him.
Can't. Look, he nicked one of the tires on my heap.
Oh, that's too bad. It's too dark to get the license number.
I got all the numbers I need. They say that somebody doesn't want us around. Did you get a look at the driver?
No, I just fired at the hood. Now let's get that tire changed. Pay another call.
On who?
On Joan and Leona Richards, Cullen's granddaughters.
The Danes which live here are related to that old money bags. I will bet you we are about to come face to face with a couple of pigs.
Remember, Marcus, they're only related by marriage.
Yes?
Yeah, my name is Frank Race. I'm an investigator working for your grandfather's attorney.
Oh, won't you come in? I'm Leona Richards.
The hallway was dim, and so was the room. But not so dim that you couldn't see the large eyes. Eyes that could reflect hurt easily. And they looked as though they made a habit of it. Except for that, her face was plain. But something about her said, if I ever come into your arms, you won't want to let me go.
I'd offer you a drink or something, Mr. Race, but, well, the household budget won't stretch that far.
Well, I could run down and pick up a fit.
Never mind, Mark.
If my grandfather sent you to bring me back to Gray Acres, Mr. Race, I won't leave my sister.
Saying that doesn't make you happy. I didn't know you'd lived at Gray Acres.
We moved out 3 months ago.
Why?
Because my sister...
Because her sister had reasons. And the reasons are nobody's business but mine.
Another girl stood in the doorway to the bedroom. She looked like Leona, only she was beautiful. And her eyes were deep and dark. But hard as polished onyx. It was a few seconds before I realized that her left arm was hung in a sling.
Joan, this is Mr. Rizzi.
I heard everything. What do you want?
Your grandfather wrote a will, and some eager beaver opened it. little ahead of schedule.
Light me a cigarette, Lorna.
All right.
The terms of the will might place your life in danger. Your life and your sister's.
Suppose you let me worry about that.
No, but it doesn't end there. This particular will might also work in reverse and make you the menace.
Sounds like Grandpa's up to his old divide-and-conquer tricks.
Don't say things about him, Joan, please.
I know you're fond of him, but I'm not.
Do either of you own a blue convertible?
Well, yes, I do.
She owns it, and I use it.
I see. Now tell me, why the sling? What happened to your arm?
I don't think my answer's going to surprise you, Mr. Race. Somebody shot me.
Look, Grace, what for? We going back to that mausoleum.
I think it might be wise to hang around Gray Acres for a while.
Think that John Rich's dame was the one who was using us for target practice?
Yeah, slow down, Marcus. There's the gate to Gray Acres up ahead.
Well, there's more than the gate there, Grace. There's a guy with a shotgun blocking the road.
Now you stay in the car. I'll talk to him.
Put your hands up there!
They're up.
Who are you? What do you want?
My name's Race. I'm working for Mr. Cullen's attorneys.
Oh, yeah. Told me you was here earlier today. I'm Blair. Tom Blair. Old man Cullen hired me to guard the property.
Cullen hired you?
Yeah. Used to work for him before, you know. Whenever there's trouble, he sends for Blair.
Well, do you have orders not to let me through this gate?
Well, I use my own judgment. Cullen's got a lot of faith in my judgment.
Well, do I pass or do I make camp out here on the road?
Who is it, Blair?
Oh, Mr. Forsythe. It's that investigating fella.
No. Hello, Race.
I thought I'd come back, just in case.
Yes, I had a hunch you would. I have a room prepared for you and your friend.
You letting men, Mr. Forsythe?
Have any objections, Blair?
Me? Why should I?
I was just wondering, that's all. I'll drive up with you, Race. There's space for your car in the garage. I think you'll be comfortable in here.
Holy smokes. Allie Cann would be comfortable in this joint. Even without Rita. What a room.
Yeah, before you go, Forsythe, I've got a question.
Fire away.
Was Joan Richards here this afternoon when I was here?
No, she wasn't. But Leona was.
Driving a blue convertible?
Well, yes. It was a present from her grandfather last Christmas. A matter of fact, I got one too, Race. And so did Mrs. Bragg, the nurse.
You mean there were three of them?
That's right, three of them. Good night.
Three convertibles, all identical. I thought about it. And after we turned in, I dreamed about it. Leona had been here, but Joan was the one who had been shot. I twisted fitfully and seemed to doze off finally. Then...
Holy cow, holy cow. Race, what was that? What was that?
Somebody screamed. Come on. Where's the light switch?
I'll get it.
Martin Beard Cullen lay propped on the pillows, his staring eyes fixed right on us, his withered old hands motionless against the white counterpane. It wasn't the stare of death, though. His glittering eyes turned to the far side of the bed. I moved around to see what he was staring at. I needed only one look. She was on the floor in a crumpled heap, her neck very neatly broken. Nurse Carrie Bragg wasn't going to inherit anything. She was dead.
We'll return to the adventures of Frank Race in just about 1 minute. And now, back to the adventures of Frank Race.
The murder of Nurse Carrie Bragg narrowed the field of Cullen's potential heirs to three. Leona and Joan Richards and Bill Forsythe. Which meant the two more of them had to die before there was any payoff. I sent Mark into town to get a few answers from Jim Fallon at his law office. And I started for a stroll around the grounds when... No telling where the shot had come from. I dived behind a hedge, flushing some birds.
I caught a wisp of smoke coming from a clump of trees near the ivy-covered wall. Got off a wild shot and returned.
Hey! Who's shooting there?
You should know. You started it.
That you, Ray?
Yes.
Well, this is May here. Blair.
I knew it wasn't Gregory Peck.
You crazy man. What you shooting at May for?
I wasn't shooting at you until you tried to pick me off with that rifle. Come out of those trees with your hands up.
Man, I wasn't shooting at you.
You clipped the top of the hedge as soon as I dove into it.
Well, I didn't even say you. I was just shooting the blue jays. Yeah, I'll come out holding the gun over my head.
What makes you so hot about blue jays, Blair?
Oh, they're bad, man, bad. Get in the chicken coops, suck the eggs dry, you know.
There aren't any chicken coops here.
Well, I guess I just got the habit from down home.
Maybe yes, maybe no. I think you were trying to scare me, Blair.
Oh, now why would I want to do a thing like that?
I don't know. But whether it's me or a bunch of innocent birds you're after, take a tip. Make your first shot count the next time you start playing this game. Because next time, I won't miss. Mark came back from Fallon's office with information that turned on a few lights. This latest will of Cullen's had been drawn up 3 months before, and it replaced a more sane and reasonable request that had been properly drawn by the attorneys. The contents of the first will told me it was time to have another chat with Leona and Joan Richards.
Please believe me, Mr. Race. I knew nothing at all of my grandfather's will. Either the first one or the new one that's causing all the trouble.
His original will left you 1/3 of his estate, and the rest was to go to charity.
That doesn't surprise me, Mr. Race. Leona's his favorite.
Then you should be interested in the contents of the new will. Because they call for action, not orders.
You're wasting your time, Mr. Race. I know the contents of the new will, and I didn't have to break into Fallon's office to learn them. I'm going out. Leona likes to answer questions, but I don't.
Oh, Ray, she's so stubborn. Suppose something happens to her.
Hey, this is no time to break up, baby.
I'm sorry. I'm so nervous and upset.
Here, let me use my handkerchief. Maybe we can get those eyes pretty again.
Let go of me.
No.
Do you know that? That's the first time a man ever kissed me.
If you can do that without practice, you'll be murdered next time around.
You don't believe me, do you?
Should I?
It's true. I've never danced. I've never had a date, and I'm 24. Now go ahead and laugh at me.
If you mean that, I'm not laughing.
Grandfather never thought that any man was good enough for us. That's why Joan's angry with him. That's why we left Gray Acres after he found out that
you... Go ahead.
I can't.
What did your grandfather find out about Joan? Maybe important.
I can't tell you. I can't, that's all.
All right, baby. It's your secret, and you can keep it. I only hope it doesn't cost you your life.
Well, hey, it's about time you got back. Where you been?
I've been walking around town, thinking.
About a dame, judging by the look on your kisser. And I'll bet it's at Leona Richards, too. Brother, that's bad.
Well, if you mean one of the girls killed Carrie Bragg, you're way off base, Marcus. They didn't do it.
Oh, brother. You got so many stars in your eyes, you can't see them all.
The old man's angry with them. He might change a will in the spur of the moment and change it within an hour. They know that.
All right, so what?
So if either of them intended to latch onto the whole fortune, they'd have killed Cullen first to make sure the will isn't changed.
Well, wait a minute. That makes sense. What that Bragg dame did, that only leaves one guy.
Yes. He's Bill Forsyth, Cullen's secretary. Let's go in and have a talk with him.
Well, okay. Which is his room?
Well, this is the one he came out of last night. Forsyth!
Maybe he's in the library. That's where he works, you know.
Yeah, we'll see you later. Meanwhile, let's have a look around in here.
Hey, what are we looking for?
I don't really know, Marcus. You go through that bureau and I'll take the writing desk here.
Okay.
Oh, very neat person, Bill Forsyth. Everything in order.
Yeah. Hey, he wears nylon shorts, too. Look. Imagine me in these things.
Now, never mind that. Keep going. You may come in.
Don't seem to be anything but clothes in here. I guess it... Hey. Look at this.
What is it?
Framed picture of John Richards in a bathing suit. That babe should wear tighter dresses. This I never know.
Now, look at the inscription down on the corner.
Huh? Oh, I didn't notice that.
You wouldn't. To Bill with all my love, now and forever. John.
Oh, wait a minute. There's something else under the guy's pajamas. A couple of letters. Hey, listen to this. Darling, Miss Bragg says the doctor gave grandfather a sedative. I can meet you tonight, usual place.
Is it signed?
It must be Joan.
Put everything back.
But does it mean something?
It means plenty. Old man Cullum found out about Joan and Bill Forsyth, and he knows that Kerry Bragg was helping them.
So he set up the will to start them knocking each other off?
I'm afraid that's it.
Are you going to look around anymore?
I'm just in the closets. I want to find out if Forsyth has any weapons hidden around. You take that one, I'll take this one.
Race. Race, come here.
What is it?
Oh, brother. It's Forsyth. He's been hanged.
For the next few hours, the number of police on the grounds at Gray Acres were almost equal to the blades of grass. I cleared permission and took Mark into town for a visit to the morgue. Only it was a newspaper morgue.
Look, chum, look, I've read the newspapers for the past 10 years and my thumb is worn out turning the pages.
Keep going.
All right, but what are you looking?
Just the items, Dateline, Texas. If it comes up, you'll know it.
Nothing ever happens in Texas except an occasional murder like this one, eh?
What is it?
Old stuff. Happened 8 years ago. In the oil fields, a wildcat are killed in a gunfight by a guy... Holy cow, a guy named Blair, Tom Blair.
That's it, baby. Give it to me. Here, look. A witness said Blair did the shooting and couldn't identify him before the grand jury. No indictment.
Yeah, but how could he not recognize a man he knows?
He must have been bought off. Look at this. The murdered man had refused to sell Cullen an oil lease, and Blair was in charge of Cullen's drilling operations. Come on. We've got to get back to Gray's Acres fast.
Hey, look. The garage is all lit up. And there's Blair, one of the maids.
Yeah, we're carrying somebody. Hurry.
Race, give me a hand here.
Yes, Joan, Richards are carrying. Yeah, look, Mark, grab the car and get out of here. Find Leona Richards and stick to her. Bring her back here.
Right.
Yeah, here, Blair, let me grab her. What happened?
Maid farmer.
She was in the garage with the motor running. I passed by. I smelled the gas.
All right.
Put her down here.
I'm afraid you're dead, Race.
Yes, I'm afraid she is.
Oh, poor Mademoiselle Joan.
Does Cullen know about this?
Well, how could he know, man? We just haul her out this minute.
I think I'll go tell him.
He sure will bust it up.
Yes, he sure will. Cullen seemed never to sleep. His eyes burned at me as I came into the room, and there was a little color in his cheeks. He made no effort to conceal the victory he was tasting. If I had things figured right, though, I had one ace. The fifth ace in the deck. The Joker.
We had a race.
There's been an accident, Cullen.
Yes. People always blame their things on accidents, Race. Usually things that happen are planned to happen. Didn't anybody ever tell you that?
Yeah, one of your granddaughters is dead, Cullen. This time I know it was an accident, a mistake. Because the wrong girl got killed.
The wrong girl?
Yes. It wasn't Joan, Cullen. Leona is dead. His eyes went wild, and the veins at the side of his neck thickened, and a flood of red spread across his cheeks. He drooled at the corner of his mouth, and then he screamed,
Blair! Blair!
I'm here, Mr. Cullen.
Leona, I told you not to hurt Leona. You were supposed to kill Joan and the others.
Shut up, you old fool.
That's all I wanted, Cullen. He did kill Joan. Leona's safe.
Leona.
I'm afraid you've been too smart, Ray.
He moved toward me. A drilling roughneck, squat and solid. I fought tough men, but not as tough as this one. His hands were as hard as a diamond drill.
I'm going to break you.
I had to keep him off, but no matter how hard I hit him, he kept closing in. I
finally got his hands in my throat.
Now, Race, I'm going to kill you.
Struggled, twisted, but was no good. Suddenly, I got tired and blacked out. Across the centuries and out of time and space, I came alive again. I didn't know whether I was in this world or the next, because the dead eyes of Martin Bayard Cullen stared down at me from where he had slumped across the edge of the bed, seized with a final heart attack. But then I heard a welcome voice that belonged to the living.
Come on, you ain't dead. Wake up, will you?
No. Hiya, Mark.
Hi. What a skull that Blair has got. Look, I bent me end wrench when I whacked him with it.
Yeah. You couldn't have gone all the way back into town and come back.
No. You see, I got to thinking, and I turned around, see? I figured the Blair was the heavy, so how could Leona get hurt if he was here? I figured the old man was using the well to cover his own dirty work.
That's very astute reasoning, Mark.
Yeah, I thought so. I called the cops while you was out, and Leona called here. I told her the whole story, and she wants to see you.
Oh, that's good, Marcus. Very good. Because I want to see her, too. She'll be one of the richest girls in the world when Cullen's will goes to probate. And her education's been woefully neglected. She'll have to be taught how to protect herself.
And you're going to teach her how?
I ain't gonna be shooting blue jays, boy.
Adventures of Frank Race, starring Tom Collins with Tony Barrett as Mark Donovan, comes to you from Hollywood. Others heard in tonight's cast were Gloria Blondell, Frank Lovejoy, Michael Ann Barrett, and Wilms Herbert. This series is written and directed by Buckley Angel and Joel Murcott. The music is composed and played by Ivan Dittmars. Be sure to be with us again at the same time next week for another dramatic chapter in The Adventures of Frank Race. Art Gilmore speaking.
The Adventures of Frank Race, on tuned to yesterday from the 25th of September, 1949, a syndicated broadcast. You're listening to An Hour of Adventure, on tuned to yesterday, by Mark Livonier. Up next, the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater, with an adaptation of the 1944 motion picture, The Mask of Demetrios, which was billed as the thrilling successor to The Maltese Falcon, most likely because of its leading men, Sidney Greenstreet and Peter Lorre, who were in the picture, marking the fifth of nine times they would be on screen together for Warner Brothers in the early to mid-1940s. Zachary Scott from the movie is also in this next CBS broadcast from April 16th, 1945.
Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild Players. The Lady Esther Screen Guild play tonight, The Mask of Demetrius. The starring players.
This is Sidney Greenstreet.
And this is Peter Lorre.
Tonight, Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild players in an intriguing story of drama, suspense, and murder, The Mask of Demetrius, based on the Warner Brothers picture. It stars Peter Lorre as Professor Leiden and Sidney Greenstreet as Eric Peters.
Even now, when I know the whole story, it's difficult to believe it all happened to me. But one must make a start, I suppose. So just for a beginning, let's put down a date. Istanbul, Turkey, 1938. A woman strolling along the beach approaches some jetsam cast up by the sea. She glances at the little mound, turns half away, turns suddenly back to it, and
nothing else on the body, Colonel Hackey. The identification card, that's all.
Thank you, Sergeant. Demetrius Macropoulos. And now, at last, the case is officially closed.
So it might have been. The case of Demetrius might have been closed. Only that very afternoon at a little party in Istanbul, I was introduced to Colonel Hackey, chief of the Turkish secret police.
A pleasure, sir, to meet you at last. So you're the famous Professor Leiden.
Oh, please, not so famous and no longer a professor. I've been retired.
Well, how fortunate. Now you can devote yourself to your writing, to your murder mysteries, huh?
Well, possibly, if I can find material.
Material? The world's full of it. Why, just today, tell me, have you ever heard of Demetrius?
Demetrius. That was the first time I ever heard his name. Demetrius Macropoulos. He sometimes called himself Demetrius Talat. A spy, an assassin, a murderer. Hunted by every policeman in Europe, but never once taken into custody. It was a strange tale that Colonel Hackey wove. A story he claimed that had no ending. But I protested the story was ended. Demetrius was dead. He was lying in a morgue that very moment. Whereupon the colonel smiled and suggested we go down and make sure.
On this slab, Colonel, this is Demetrius.
Oh, yes, thanks. Ugly devil, isn't he, Mr. Lydon?
I'm afraid I'm no judge. I've never looked at a dead man before.
Well, this ought to satisfy you for a while. Ah, what a pity that mouth will never talk again. There's still so much I'd like to know. For 16 years, ever since that day in Smyrna, it was my hope to get him. And now I have him. Spewed up by the sea in a cheap, shoddy suit. Dead by stabbing. Mr. Lydon, would you care to see the wound?
No, I don't think so, Colonel.
Had enough, huh?
Yes, quite enough. It wasn't true. I hadn't had enough. That night in my hotel room, trying to sleep, my mind was full of Demetrius. What a character, I thought. What a story he would make. If I could root out the things the police never knew. In Smyrna, in Sofia, in Belgrade, in Paris. There must be people who knew him. All over Europe, there must be people. And then I told myself, no, the thing is foolish. It's unthinkable. It's absurd. But even as my mind rejected it, my hand reached out for the telephone.
Good evening. Yes, this is the desk clerk. Mr. Lydon?
Oh, yes, sir.
Ticket to Smyrna for tomorrow morning.
Yes, sir. I'll take care of it at once.
You're welcome, sir. Good night.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, yes, sir.
Is Mr. Constantin Gullis staying at this hotel?
Gullis? No, sir. No one by that name.
Thank you. Sorry I've troubled you.
No trouble, sir. We're never busy at this hour. I was just reading about this murder.
Murder?
Demetrius Macropoulos. They found him on the beach.
Demetrius?
Yes, sir. Did you know him, sir?
No. No, it's just that... Thank you very much. Good night. Are you sure? Are you positive?
Well, you can look around the morgue yourself, sir. Not a body in the place.
The paper said this man named Demetrius...
Oh, him. He's gone. Yes. Cremated. About an hour ago.
That man. That man whose life was to cross my own so strangely. I didn't know about him then. I had no hint of him until I got to Smyrna.
I understand what you wish, Mr. Lydon. I will get it for you.
You're sure you know exactly what I want?
But of course. In 1922, a certain Conrad, a moneylender, is stabbed to death.
Uh-huh.
A man named Driss Abdul is charged with the crime.
That's right.
But he goes to his death blaming another man, a certain Demetrius. You wish the records of the trial.
Are you sure you can get them?
For 500 piastres? I have them.
You have them?
Right here, my friend.
But how?
A month ago, a certain man comes to me.
Yeah?
He asks me to get them for him. He pays me well.
Why didn't you tell me?
You did not ask.
What was he like? Can you describe him? How did he talk?
Like an Englishman, perhaps.
Yeah.
Or maybe a Frenchman. Or an American. Who knows?
I didn't think much about it then. By now, there was only one thing in my mind. To follow that crooked trail... through the years, from Istanbul to Smyrna, from Smyrna to Athens, and from there to Sofia. It was on a train just before we got in. As it happened, I was all alone.
I beg your pardon. I must apologize for intruding. My compartment was so very crowded.
Oh, that's quite all right. Plenty of room in here.
How good of you to have put it that way. I'm sure we'll have a very pleasant journey.
Oh, well, a rather short one, I'm afraid. I'm getting off in Sofia.
Oh, that's too bad. I'm going through to Bucharest.
Oh?
If I may introduce myself, my name is Peters.
Peters? I would guess you're English.
By birth, perhaps. But actually, I'm a citizen of the world. To me, all languages are beautiful.
Oh, yes, if one says the right things.
We're coming into Sofia, sir. I'll take your bag.
Oh, thank you, Porter.
You like Sofia?
Thank you.
Beautiful city. The best hotel is the Slavyanska Basada. I hope you don't mind my suggesting it.
Oh, please, to the contrary, you're very kind.
Not at all. That's the trouble with this world. There's not enough kindness.
Well, I believe you're helping to remedy that deficiency. Goodbye, Mr. Peters.
Goodbye, Mr. Lighton. Goodbye.
Curious sort of fellow. You're... That's funny. How did he know my name? Even then, I didn't guess the truth. Oh, I wondered about Mr. Peters, of course, but I was more concerned with Demetrius. And in Sofia, there was a good deal to be learned. Demetrius, the petty thief. Demetrius, the thug. Demetrius, the blackmailer. Old newspaper files, police court records. I searched them all. And at last, they took me to Madame Irana at the cafe of the Golden Fez. She was sullen at first, suspicious, resentful. But when I told her that Demetrius was dead, she...
Dead? Well, it's very hard to believe.
Well, I saw his body myself.
How did he look?
Oh, his hair was gray, his clothes were old, and rather cheap.
So he didn't become rich after all. Not even with my 1,000 francs.
Took 1,000 francs from you?
I gave them to him. It was that afternoon. He rushed into my room. He was very excited. He made me promise if the police came, I'd swear he'd been with me all day.
Well, yes, I've seen the records. I know they question you. Isn't that the day the Prime Minister was killed? Demetrius?
I never knew for sure. He told me he needed 1,000 francs to get away. Once he reached Belgrade, he'd be very rich. He'd send for me.
And did he send for you?
I never heard from him again. Oh, all these years, it wasn't just 1,000 francs.
I understand. You were in love with him.
A liar. Thief. An assassin, perhaps. And still, I...
Madame Irana, I've troubled you enough for one evening. You've helped me, really, a great deal with my story. Possibly if you think of something else,
If I think of something else...
I'll be at my hotel, the Slavyanska Bazaar. I didn't realize it was so late.
You're a little early, Mr. Lighton.
Peters.
Will you close the door, please? Huh? Considering this gun in my hand, that becomes an order, not a request. Now then.
What does this mean? What are you doing in my room? Why have you been going through my things?
Don't move, please. That's better. Now, Mr. Lighton, let us be frank with each other. And I propose to start with your answering a question. Why are you interested in Demetrius?
Demetrius?
Yes, dear Mr. Lighton. From Istanbul to Smyrna. From Smyrna to Athens. From Athens to Sofia. You have been absorbed in tracing his record. You see, I have observed you rather closely.
No doubt.
You haven't answered my question.
I have nothing to hide. I'm interested in Demetrius as a character, as a basis of a book. I may write a detective story.
A detective story? How fascinating.
And now perhaps you'll answer a simple question, Mr. Peters. What is your interest in Demetrius? Did you ever know him?
Mr. Leiden, I do not recollect that I promised to give you any information.
Well, then I have to show, to guess the answers. Is your interest money, perhaps? A treasure Demetrius had left somewhere, huh? Oh, no. When I think of him lying in a morgue, just that shabby suit, not a penny on him, I am forced to... What's the matter?
I understand you to say that Demetrius is in a morgue.
Yes, so what of it?
Mr. Leiden, it occurs to me that we can be of great help to each other. What did you say if I proposed an alliance?
An alliance? For what?
I take it you're not a rich man, Mr. Leiden.
No, I'm not rich.
You can be very easily if you will meet me in Paris.
Why on earth should I go to Paris?
Shall we say to learn the whole story of Demetrius? Mr. Leiden, I'm aware of certain facts which I cannot reveal to you at the moment. You, on the other hand, possess an important piece of information. You may not know it is important, but nevertheless, it is.
But how will that make me rich?
Added to what I already know, it is worth, at the very least, 1,000,000 French francs.
1,000,000 francs?
1,000,000 francs. Mr. Leiden, shall I have the pleasure of seeing you in Paris?
Yes, I did go to Paris. Quite eagerly, in fact. The story of Demetrius had grown beyond anything I dared to imagine. I knew that now I could never drop it until I had discovered the end. So I arrived, and after a busy 24 hours, I telephoned Peters that I was there. I must give him credit. He wasted no time. Within the hour, he was at my hotel.
My dear Mr. Leiden, I cannot tell you how glad I am to see you.
Glad enough to leave your gun at home?
But of course.
Oh, that's good. Permits me to speak more freely, Mr. Peterson.
Peterson? You know about that?
Oh, yes, and more. Your name is Eric Peterson. You belong to a smuggling gang organized here in Paris by Demetrius. You were arrested in December 1931, fined 2,000 francs, and sentenced to 1 month imprisonment.
Who told you that?
Oh, no one. I dug that out for myself. Old newspaper files are very interesting. Well, yesterday I found this story and this picture of you.
Oh, yes, that picture. Not very flattering, is it?
Oh, well, we are not discussing photography, Mr. Peterson.
Please. My name is Peters now.
All right, then, Peters. You know, in Istanbul, I was told that Demetrius betrayed a lot of you to the police in order to ensure his own escape. Is that true?
Demetrius behaved very badly to us all.
Oh, yes, and there was talk of vengeance. You all threatened to kill him as soon as you were free.
I did not threaten. Some of the others, perhaps.
Oh.
Constantine Gullis was always a hothead.
Oh, I see. You did not threaten. You preferred to act.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
No? Then let me put it this way. It is believed that Demetrius died a poor man. Is that likely? Your gang must have made a lot of money for him.
Very great deal.
And he was not the sort to let it go, was he? So, do you know what's in my mind, Mr. Peters? I am wondering if you killed Demetrius for his money.
Mr. Leiden, I think you are very indiscreet.
Do you?
And also very fortunate. Now, just suppose I had killed Demetrius. Shouldn't I now be forced to kill you, too?
Oh, sure. So you did bring your gun.
Yes. I lied to you a moment ago, I admit it. I was curious to know what you would do.
Well, now you know.
Mr. Leiden, even if you cannot be indiscreet, at least try to use your imagination. Is it likely that Demetrius would make a will in my favor? No. Then how could I put my hands on his money? People no longer keep their wealth in treasure chests, you know.
No, I suppose they don't.
Then what motive would I have to kill him? Come now, Mr. Leiden, let us be sensible. I know you disapprove of me. I really cannot blame you. But since we must do business together, let us cultivate at least the illusion of friendship. Shall we dine together tonight?
Very well.
Excellent. Afterwards, we'll have coffee in my apartment. And then, Mr. Leiden, you shall know everything.
Everything?
Everything. It's an honor to have you here, Mr. Leiden. Such an excellent dinner, too. Tell me, how do you like me, this place?
Your place? Oh, I noticed the name on the door was Godfrey.
A friend of mine. He's away at the moment.
Oh, I see.
You conclude, I suppose, that I am Godfrey.
Well, I...
Mr. Leiden, you're rather naive. But let us get to our business now. I have a picture here in this drawer. Ah, here it is. Tell me, do you recognize it?
Oh, of course, that's Demetrius.
Yes, I thought you'd say that.
Is there any reason why I shouldn't?
One slight reason. It's not Demetrius.
What on earth do you mean?
I mean this is a photograph of Constantine Gullis.
In Istanbul, in a morgue, I saw it...
Perhaps I'd better explain. When we who had been betrayed were released from prison, Demetrius had disappeared. Yeah. Gullis spent years tracking him down. And when he found him, Demetrius acted first. He invited Gullis on a cruise.
And murdered him.
Gullis' body that you saw.
But then... Demetrius is alive.
Alive and flourishing right here in Paris. That is why you have come, Mr. Leiden.
Me?
Our friend has assumed another name, of course. He is fabulously rich. He moves in the very best circles. Director of several prominent banks. It should be worth something to him to protect his position. It should be worth precisely 1,000,000 francs.
Mm-hmm. Blackmail.
You choose to be vulgar?
I choose to have no part of it.
I'm afraid you forget.
I know. You still have your gun.
Yes. You see, Demetrius may want proof. He might ask you to describe the body.
No, you're insane to cross a man like that. Once he knows where you are.
But he doesn't know. In my note to him, I specified that the money should be delivered to a messenger at Versailles. Hmm? The messenger will take a route, devious, and meet us several miles from here. It's almost time now. Shall we go?
Hey, Mr. Peters, do you really think he'll pay?
Of course. I haven't the slightest doubt.
No, I have a feeling it's too easy.
The great things are always easy. Listen, the car. Yes, it's a Renault. That's it. Good. I have it. This is here, isn't it? Beautiful. All in 1,000 franc notes.
Well, then it appears that you have won. Mr. Peters, I don't think you'll need me any longer.
But, Mr. Leiden, your share.
I never intended taking any part of it.
Yes, I can understand that you would think that way. But at least you must help me count it, my friend, and help me celebrate. A bottle of champagne, the very best. A great vintage year, say 1919 or 1920. 100 francs a bottle. I insist.
You insist?
Yes, I insist. Well, now here we are. Back home, safe and sound.
Sound, perhaps, but I'm not so sure we are safe.
Mr. Leiden, you are cautious, aren't you? But perhaps wisely so. I must confess to you, even if you had demanded your share of this million, I doubt if you would have gotten it.
I was aware of that.
Then we can drink as friends. Now, here is the champagne, and all we need is some ice. I'll get it from the kitchen. It won't take... Demetrius!
You don't flatter me by looking so surprised. You must have known I was not entirely stupid.
Listen, Demetrius...
What a fool you were to send your note by messenger. It was so simple to trace him to... Don't move, Peterson. You either, sir.
No, Demetrius. Put down that gun. I'll give the money back. Go away. I'll...
Another one.
Another one. And now you.
No, not me. Don't shoot!
No.
I'm sorry. I had to do it.
Leiden, he's down. The gun.
I've got it. You see this, Demetrius? I have your gun. If you move, I'll shoot.
I think you would. Look here. If you shoot me, you'll only get 1,000,000. Release me and I'll give you another as well.
Please, go get the police.
But then he'll get away.
I have my gun.
I'll cover him. All right.
No, monsieur, wait. If you go, he'll shoot me, don't you see that? Why not take my offer?
I shall be back with the police.
I'll give you 3 million.
Watch him, Peter.
5 million, monsieur.
I'll be back as fast as I can. No, he couldn't. Peters, you said you would only... Peters!
Dead. Both of them dead. So this is the end of Demetrius. This is the end of the story. Peters, you didn't live to know it, did you? You didn't live to open your champagne. All right. I'll open it. I'll drink to you. I'll drink to you because I have my story now. Because... Huh? What's this? Champagne sec, 1934? 5 francs the bottle in any cafe. I should have known that, Peters. I should have guessed. You cheated even on the champagne.
Thank you, Peter Lorre and Sidney Greenstreet, for your fine performances in tonight's play.
The Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 16th of April, 1945. And that does it for this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us again for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.